It's Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U. AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
Welcome to hour number two of the Hurricane Hotline. Delighted you're with us. Thanks to Jim Larranega, JD Arteaga for joining us in hour number one. Welcome to hour number two of the Hotline. Let's jump into University of Miami spring football. Hurricanes back on the field today. My broadcast partner, Don Bailey Jr., we'll talk about that. Plus, we had Pro Day yesterday on Monday, so we'll talk about that as well. But back to spring football. What was week one like? Last week was spring break, so no spring football. What did you see in week number one?
You know, Joe, I focused intensely on the quarterback room and the quarterback play. And then, of course, I always meander over to see the offensive line. But I'll tell you what I saw. I saw a room of quarterbacks. And I think that's something that I can't remember having around the University of Miami in a very, very, very long time. And, you know, you've got Cam has come in and shown his leadership skills and moving around the pocket well. It seems like he can make every single throw. And Poffenberger is another young guy that has got a couple years left that transferred in, and he looks, you know, he looks pretty darn good as well. And Emery's looks good, and Jacurry looks good, and the true freshman looks good. So I mean, there's a lot of talent in that room, and it's kind of following. We go back to Coach Cristobal's blueprint. You know, year one we had to accomplish this, and year two he had to accomplish this, and he knew that he had to come up with a difference maker or difference makers in the quarterback room immediately. And he was able to make that happen. So those guys are as good. I think everybody there is as good as advertised. And, you know, the receivers have gotten better because of the quarterbacks. You know, Restrepo made a couple fantastic catches in practice, and, you know, that doesn't shock anybody. I still think that Miami has got to come up with another big play guy at that spot, and hopefully by the end of spring or before, you know, summer camp begins, Miami will have that.
I think it's funny that he wants to become a bigger team. It's almost symbolic that his quarterback, one of his quarterbacks, Judd Anderson, is 6'7". He's probably not hard to miss.
You know, and he is 6'7". I remember seeing him in the locker room on one of his visits last year in the post game, and I didn't know who he was, so I forget who I grabbed. I go, who the heck is that? I says, is that a tight end or is that a tackle to be? And he says, oh no, that's the quarterback. I said, wow. I said, this guy's legit. And you know, we've always talked about it over the years. It's a big man's game, and big guys seem to do pretty well with it. And he's a big quarterback, and you know, Joe, he's going to gain so much by watching these older players. You know, whether it's Emery Jacurry or Poff or Cam, however it is, all those guys, he's going to learn so much from, and it's going to pay off dividends.
You know, what gets under my skin is, they won't be competing more than, well, they've had three spring practices. I'm exaggerating this a little bit, but it won't be that far down the road before somebody says, oh, I wonder which one transfers first. And I just had this conversation with Coach L. The other side of the transfer stuff, where everybody's always says, oh, he's so-and-so is going to transfer. Good players want to play with good players. And Mario Cristobal is finally getting to the point where he's got a roster where guys are looking around going, hey, the guy next to me is a good player. And the guy next to him is a good player. And the guy next to him is a good player. Good players want to play with good players. And that also creates an attitude, an environment, and a culture.
And, you know, one thing that Coach Cristobal makes sure of is he checks that competitive meter when he's recruiting guys, and they're not the ones that are you know, so quick to transfer. Now, sometimes you get backed up behind two or three or four guys that are phenomenal. And, you know, it's obvious if you want to play sooner, sometimes you're going to have to leave. And that happened years ago too, when you had to sit out, but I'm with you. I think what people are starting to see is that this is going to be a pretty darn good football team. And behind it are some pretty behind this group is some pretty darn good football players. And, you know, we're going into year three, and about 85% of the roster is his. And that 85%, coupled with the group that's still here, is you're going to be able to put together a big team. Now, you've got some losses in some areas. You know, it's in the secondary where you're losing two guys that are going to go to the NFL at safety, and you got a couple quarters that are pretty darn good that gave you a bunch of years and a bunch of games. So, you know, there's going to be some areas that have to be filled, and there's going to be some deficiencies. But I think overall, I see the biggest difference is in the attitude and the understanding of what expectations are as being a Miami Hurricane under Mario Cristobal.
Now, I do think, because guys miss spring football, I do think spring football enthusiasm or criticism, one way or the other, whether it's enthusiasm or criticism, has to be tempered, because spring football always has missing pieces.
It does. You know, the value of spring football now is especially for the guys that I think it helps the young guys that come in early from high school. I think it's those 15 practices and are really, you know, from January to June, let's say, that time on campus, the practices, the strength and conditioning, the nutrition. I think it's those 15 practices compiled with everything else. It's equivalent to a full year. And I think that that's the important excuse me, Joe. I think it's the important thing is that you get in here, you get in early, and you can be productive because you know what to expect, and you know, you learn what's expected of you, and you learn how to work through the fall.
What do you think can be expected of Trevante Citizen? In August, it'll be 2 years since his knee injury. That was a tough knee injury. Is this going to be maybe this is where spring football benefits somebody?
Well, I think for him, you know, towards the end of last year, he was moving around pretty darn good. I would say towards the end of the season, he's still, wears a brace. Whenever I pay attention to it, I've seen that's normal. The good news is that he's not on a stopwatch, and he's got to make sure, we've got to make sure that he's healthy. You've got to make sure that he's ready to go. And those knees, you have to remember, they used to take a full year, sometimes a year and a half back in the day. And then everybody's gotten spoiled that it's a 9-month injury or 8 months or whatever. So, you know, his situation is only he can determine it. I think that physically, on the eyeball test, you've got a guy that passes everything with flying colors. Now, is he going to get back to where he was? I don't know. Nobody saw it. You know, I don't know. But if it takes this year, I wouldn't look for anything this spring, and I would hope to see him participate in the fall. And if it happens, great. If it doesn't, then he's still got more time. But I was impressed with him before he got his injury, and they're just going to follow the proper protocol to get him back on the field.
In our next segment, Don Bailey will be talking with offensive line coach Alex Mirabal. He had a lot of comments earlier in spring about Jalen Rivers, but Coach Mirabal, what do you think his thoughts are, or maybe just give us an overview of what you see from his offensive line?
You know, Joe, they're building the pyramid exactly the way that they want to. And what does that mean? Miami's going to have one of the biggest, most impressive offensive lines, not only physically, but athletically. I mean, they've got the junior college kid out at right tackle who's a 6'7", and he is 6'7".
Markel Bell, right? Okay, so I saw a picture of him, and I just want to say again, I usually look for these guys, but if he's going to be the starting right tackle, I'm going off the bus after him.
Well, he's one of the guys, him and Maui Noe, that you want to send out for the coin toss. But here's the catch. they don't just recruit size. They recruit people that can move and have good feet and can bend and can adapt to the position. And I think Coach Cristobal and Coach Mirabal are going to do exactly what they've done in the past. They're going to recruit the best offensive lineman in the country. They're going to expect to have the best offensive line in the country, and they're going to put a lot of expectations on that room and count on that room to lead the way, just like they did last year. You've got basically an opening at left guard for graduation, and you've got an opening at center. Both of those men were NFL players, are going to be NFL players, and if you're losing an NFL player, you better hope that you can replace him with an NFL player, and that's the goal.
All right. In our next segment, Don Bailey will talk with Alex Mirabal, so stay tuned for that. Yesterday, we had Pro Day at the indoor practice facility, and I'm still trying to figure out how to frame Pro Day. There weren't a lot of players out there. I don't know that anybody did anything they would go, wow, he ran a great 40, other than Tyler Harrell, but he ran the great 40, but then he couldn't catch the ball. I thought Cam Kitchens, he was just, I'll call it consistent. And I think you got to dig deeper for players like Cam Kitchens to find out. If you want to find out more about Cam Kitchens, I think it's more, you dig deeper than just what you see in Pro Day numbers. But I guess we'll start there. His bench press, he had 13 reps. His 40 was 4.5. His second 40 was a little bit slower than the first 40. He didn't do the vertical. He didn't do the broad jump. He didn't do the shuttle. He did a lot of other agility drills. But I'm certain that Cam Kitchens is going to be a very good NFL player.
He will be a very good NFL player, and I talked about it during the broadcast. And you know, I think everything gets compiled, right? Everything's going to get compiled. The numbers and the events that they participated in, whether it was at the combine in Indianapolis or if it was at Pro Day, all of those things get thrown into the computer, and it spits it out, and it gives you the comparable to everybody else. But Cam Kitchens, for a large part of his career, showed up on tape. And I think, to me, you know, after the football season, everybody talks about the Senior Bowls and they talk about Pro Day and the Combine. You forget about the tape, and you forget about whether it's 3 years of production, 4 years of production, 5 years or 6 years of production. You forget about that. And the tape is going to set the standard on where you are, and then everything that they test you on is either going to push you up or push you down. And then I think really the thing that you have to look at the most, especially for guys that are being considered for first, second, third round, is how they interact with the NFL coaches. And I've said this before, and I believe it. In high school football, the college coaches talk only about, man, what can this guy do? They make you a 5-star or a 4-star because you can do this, 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 and this. The NFL, what they talk about is what you can't do. And that's what they're concerned about, the can'ts and the won'ts and the inabilities that you have. And they want to find out what all of those are and then start building the positive case. And I think Cam Kitchens is a guy that's undeniable in the fact that he can help an NFL team. And to me, the number one thing was that young man was a leader in special teams and refused to be taken off special teams. Even when he's named an All-American, he's going to participate and has led special teams in tackles. And I think that tells me all I need to know about him and the type of football player he is.
James Williams did not participate. He was there, but did not participate in most of the drills. The other high-profile name, and he's going to be under a lot of scrutiny, is Leonard Taylor. His 40 was 5.2, 5.1, depending which one you look at. The times were unofficial that we have, but he's going to get a lot of scrutiny.
Yeah, he is, Joe, and both of those players, right, are 5-stars.
Yeah.
And you've got Williams, who is, you know, his weight posted today was 200 and almost close to 230 pounds. So it looks to me that he is, trending towards the, you know, the linebacker side. I think he'd be a strong side linebacker, Sam linebacker, whatever people are used to call him. But he got a taste of that this year with Coach Guidry, and I think that benefited him more than he'll ever realize it. And it's going to be interesting to see where he fits in at the combine. I think he ran about a 4.65, so that's a good time, average time for a safety. That's an exceptionally good time for a linebacker. And with his height and range and his ability to match up with the tight end, I think it is going to enhance his opportunity in the National Football League. Go ahead.
I was going to say Matt Lee he was pretty impressive with his bench press.
Yeah, you know, I saw him afterwards after we did the show, and I was walking out with him, and you know, I asked him. I said, "What are your thoughts?" He says, "Well, I didn't run the 40 because I don't know that I could have bettered my 5.06 than I had at the combine." I said, "Well, that made sense." I said, It looks like you put on good weight. He says, I have. And, you know, he weighed in a little over 300 pounds. He said 25 was the number that he was shooting for on the bench press, and he got it. And, you know, he's a guy that's confident in his skills and his ability, and he should be. I mean, with the IQ level, football IQ level that he has and his ability to set defenses and really run the entire offensive line. You got to remember, that kid came in as a transfer, was team captain, and ran that darn offense, and really was one of the leaders on the team. And I don't care if that he might be a little undersized and he may not bench 32 times. He's going to find a football team, and he's going to make it.
Yeah. Javion Cohen was kind of limited in what he did. He did run. He ran 5.3. But I think there are a lot of good things to like about Javion Cohen. I think he clearly gets a chance on draft day.
Yeah, I do too, Joe. I think he's a draftable player. You know, Matt was, believe it or not, you know, Matt came from Central Florida, comes to Miami, and Cohen comes from Alabama to Miami, and you would expect, you know, he was recruited as a tackle at Alabama, played a bunch, started 24, 25 games for the Crimson Tide, comes down here and starts immediately, gives you Miami 12 starts. But it was surprising for me to see that the maturity level was a little bit more for Matt Lee than for Cohen. And I'm talking about football maturity. But he got better. I think he enhanced his opportunity by being under Coach Mirabal. Coach Mirabal really forces technique, and he teaches it, but he forces it. I mean, you're just not going to play unless you do it his way, and I understand that. And Javion picked up on it. He picked up the importance of how every step is, because he came in, his steps weren't as good as they needed to be, and how he attacks the defensive lineman. And we saw, you know, firsthand how good he is as a puller. And I think, you know, that 5.3 time doesn't do him justice, because he's very, very quick in the box, and he's a good puller. And I believe he's going to get drafted and help an NFL team.
And then there was Jayden Davis participated in all the drills. Keandre Smith participated in all the drills. Couched all except for the bench press. So those three guys played a lot of football in their college career. There is plenty of tape on Smith, Couch, and Jayden Davis.
Yeah, you know, I think that's important. And all three of those guys are kind of in the same spot where you have to, when you're in a position like them, and let's take to Corey Couch. I think he played in 48 games or 46 games and had a ton of tackles. Is you got to find somebody that likes you, that says, you know what, I believe in this guy, or I believe that he can help my football team. And what we have to remember now, or I have to remind myself, you know, when I played in the National Football League, the roster was, I don't know, it was 42 or 43 guys, or something. It was a low, low number, and there was no practice squad.
Yeah.
Now you've got a larger roster, you've got an active practice squad, and you get somebody that believes you. That's what's important. Just get somebody to believe in you, get on that team, play special teams, get in there and compete, And the worst case scenario is, heck, you're on practice squad. And then you know, it's an NFL redshirt. You get an opportunity to adjust to the speed of the game. You can work on your skills, and you supposedly are going to get, you know, next level coaching. And it should create an opportunity. So it's not like do or die like it was back in the day when the roster size was, you know, down to nothing. And there's more opportunity now. So I think for guys like that, testing strong today helps. But they got to find one guy on one team that's going to stand on a table and say, hey, I want this guy as my free agent. I'll take the swing of the bat with him and see what happens.
Well, worth reminding people, the spring game will be on April the 13th on campus at Cobb Stadium at 4 o'clock. And we'll have a broadcast of that game from the campus on April the 13th. So we'll do the spring game. And when we come back, Don Bailey, you'll be talking with Alex Mirabal. He's always great to speak with, always very insightful.
Yeah, I love him. I really do. I don't think he's got a bigger fan than Don Bailey. And I appreciate the intensity that he brings. And, you know, you saw some unfinished products come in, and 12 months later, they were ready for prom day when you watched Lee and Cohen today. I mean, they just really honed in their game and did a phenomenal job getting them ready and elevating their status as NFL players.
Okay, when we come back, Don Bailey Jr. Stays with us, and he'll talk with Alex Mirabal as we continue on the Hurricane Hotline right after this. All right, spring is here, and that means it's a great time for you to jump into a new vehicle. Williamson Cadillac is sure to have the new vehicle you're looking for. The CT4, the CT5, XT5, I'm driving the XT4. It is smooth, it's reliable, has plenty of room. The XT6, very smooth, and boy, oh boy, how about this one? The new electric Lyriq. Get the most out of the South Florida lifestyle in a new Cadillac from Miami's premier luxury dealership, which was founded over 50 years ago. But Williamson Cadillac is more than just a dealership. They are our friends. They are our neighbors. Williamson Cadillac has built a loyal client base by staying focused on the customer experience. They are loyal. Customers are treated like family. Enjoy world-class customer service when you purchase a new Cadillac from Williamson Cadillac. New vehicles are arriving every single day, which means Williamson is sure to have the new Cadillac you are looking for. Come in today and experience Williamson Cadillac's preferred atmosphere. Easy to find on US 1 at 104th Street, just south of the Palmetto, or online at WilliamsonAutomotiveGroup.com. Get the most out of the South Florida lifestyle and experience a new Cadillac from your premier luxury dealership, Williamson Cadillac. Williamson is Miami.
Now back to Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U. AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
All right, welcome back to the Hurricane Hotline. Delighted that you are with us as we continue on. Talking more University of Miami spring football. Don Bailey Jr. is with Hurricanes offensive line coach Alex Mirabal.
All right, we're with offensive line coach Alex Mirabal. And coach, spring football is going on. Have to replace a couple guys.
Yeah.
How do you go about doing that?
You know what? Just on a daily basis, you know, and just try to replace two guys by trying to find five or six guys, you know, and create depth, which depth will allow us to get the five best guys on the field. You know, we've got to replace Cohen, and we've got to replace Matt Lee, who are, you know, now preparing for their pro day. They did a good job in the combine and stuff, but, you know, it's time to move on, right? So we went in the transfer portal and took a center that we think is going to be really good for us, Zach Carpenter. And then, you know, we've got to replace Cohen. We've got a bunch of our young guys last year who are no longer young. And then we've got some of our signees that are here now. You know, we got Markel Bell here, who's a tackle. And we've got Nino Francavilla, who's an interior O lineman. And we've got Derek Plaz, who's a tackle. So add those guys to that mix. And so that's how you try to replace those guys. You know, and I don't need Zach Carpenter to beat Matt Lee. I need Zach Carpenter to be Zach Carpenter, right? I don't need anybody to beat Javion Cohen. I need Matt McCoy, or I need Luis Cristobal, or I need Ryan Rodriguez, or I need Samson Okanola to be themselves, you know? So that's how I look at it.
And Coach, we're going to the third spring, and this offensive line has evolved, the size of it, the speed of it. the girth, everything. And that's what you guys recruit. You're looking for big guys that can play football.
Yeah. Well, so that's a formula that Coach Cristobal, obviously, with his time with Coach Saban when he was at Alabama, that's something that Coach Cristobal truly believes in, something that he carried over to his tenure at the University of Oregon, and then that we've brought here to the University of Miami. And it's not only, Don, it's not only big guys, but it's big people that can move, you know, because if you're big but you can't move, then it's wasted, right? So we're never going to sacrifice athleticism for size. So if someone is long and is athletic, then we're all in on that, you know. And none of these guys that we just brought in, Zach Carpenter, Markel Bell, Nino Francavilla, Derek Plaz, and then he's coming in June, Juan Minaya, none of those guys we have to put on a diet. You know, they're big people, but we don't have to put them on a diet. You know, Francis Mauinoa from last year, Samson Okunola, Bruno Kinsler, you know, those guys, we don't have to put them on a diet, you know. So we're able to build on it, and it's time for Bruno Kinsler to grow up. It's time for Samson to grow up. And so that's how you go about creating the depth of the unit.
Have created a new quarterback room, leads to the conversation of protecting the quarterback.
Yeah.
You spend a lot of time on pass pro.
Yeah, you know what? So we spend a lot of time on pass pro. One of the things that I really enjoyed this offseason, and it was kind of generated by the quarterback coaches, by Coach Dawson, and then Cam Ward and Reese and Emery and JB and Judd, was protection. So I would meet with them. They asked me, hey, Coach, can we meet? So I would meet with them twice a week when we got off the road recruiting, and it was just me talking about protections. So I was talking to them as if they were offensive linemen so that they would have an idea. The most important thing in protection, Don, is who are we not blocking? Who's coming free, right? So if we're in six-man protection, they're bringing seven, quarterback's got the seven. If we're in five-man protection and they bring six, quarterback's got the six guy, right? If we're in a seven-man protection scheme and they're bringing zero and they're bringing eight, someone's coming free. Cam, Reese, Judd, JB, Emery, they got to know who's coming free. So it was awesome. Yeah, we got to protect them. But the most important pass protector in our program is the quarterback. He's got to protect himself, right? And he's got to do a great job of, if we've got a play action pass called into a crazy blitz, help get us out of that and get us into a protection that'll handle it a lot easier and better. And because of Cam's experience, heck, he's got old eyes. That joker, he's making checks and stuff like that, and it's awesome. So our center, you know, he's making his calls, but Cam has the power to veto it and override it. So I would say this, yeah, it's our job to keep him upright, but it's his job to keep himself upright, right? And he's done an unbelievable job. Him, Reese, all those guys have done a great job because they've spent time and they kind of understand what we're doing. We had a great look today where the offensive line made a call, right? And they were bringing a pressure, and he was about to change it, but he realized, I can't change it because all my old linemen are covered up. If I change it, I'm going to screw this up. So he let the protection ride. We blocked who we could block. The free guy that was coming, he beat him with a throw. So the best pass protector is a quarterback and a quick release, and that guy does a great job, and he's got a tremendous amount of leadership. He's got a tremendous amount of respect from the skill guys, from the old linemen, you know, and he's just got, I don't know, it, right? He's got it, you know. Reese has it, you know. Emery has it. Those guys have it, whatever it is. And what it is to me is that guys want to play for them, you know. And because guys, they don't look at him as a court. They look at him as one of us, you know. And so he's been awesome to be around. And, you know, he kind of takes care of business. He cool, calm, collected, you know. And that's important. And that's important. He's not doesn't have a deer in the headlight looks.
Coach, we can't get away from the running game ever. We talk about pass protection.
Right.
That's another form of pass protection. It's a great running game. You guys did a phenomenal job with it last year.
Yeah.
How do you continue to evolve in that category?
You know what? It's build off of the schemes that we had. And, you know, we brought a hell of a running back coach in, Matt Merritt. So Matt's got some different ideas on things that he feels could help us in the run game. You know, and, you know, our analysts did a great job this offseason of, okay, this is the path that we were going in as an offense in the run game. What are some things that we can do from got people that are running the same kind of schemes where we can evolve it a little bit, right? So our run game, Don, last year during the season, evolved, right? What we thought we were going to be kind of changed throughout the course of the season, right? So we kind of got a feel now as to where we feel we want to go with it. And now it's about growing with it. It's about getting better at play action protection. Because I thought that up front, I didn't think we did a good job with play action protection. That's something I think that we need to spend time on. Our screen game, something that we need to spend time on. You know, little things that people think are little things, but are huge things that we feel can help elevate our stuff. And, you know, great pass protection is the run game. But you know what? I love it. If we got to throw the ball 50 times to win, let's roll. You know, let's roll. At the end of the day, who gives a heck? Let's win. You know, and whatever it's going to take to do that, we're rolling with it. You know, and there ain't no one who's got a better background throwing the football than Shannon, than Coach Dawson with the offensive system that he's been a part of. And it's cool because a lot of the stuff that he's done from a pass game standpoint marries into what Cam has done in his past. You know, and I've heard Coach Dawson sit with Cam, Reese, Emery, JB, and Judd, and hey, what do you guys – well, Coach, I really don't like that. Coach, you know where we were at? We used to do this. Okay, let's take a look at it. You know, so get those guys involved. Get them invested in it. So it's been awesome. But we just – whatever we were doing off run game-wise, we want to build off of it. And it could be motion shifts, you know, play action, screens. And so that's kind of the path that we've been going on. So it's been awesome. And you know what? We tell everybody this all the time. You know, it's what you learn after you know everything that's important and special. You know, so we continue to try to stay on a learning curve as an offense and as a defense, and playing against our defense, hell, you know, they don't have a – it's everything. You know, you got four down, odd, fair, and it's great because our guys get tested from day one. You know, there's no base install, none of that. It's here comes Star Wars, you know, which is what makes Lance and his defense so effective, you know, and it's awesome. It truly is about iron sharpening iron.
Thanks, Coach.
When we come back on the Hurricane Hotline, we'll talk with J.D. Pickell. Josh Darrow joins us from the Behind the U podcast. Our broadcast partner, our sideline analyst, Josh Darrow, joins us next on the Hurricane Hotline. Attention, Hurricane fans. We got a lot of things to talk about in terms of gear. We've got baseball games. We've got a spring football game. You want to look your best. Visit the Hurricanes Team Store, your one-stop shop for the latest and greatest in Hurricanes gear. From jerseys to hats, t-shirts to accessories, we have everything you need to show off your Hurricane pride. Located just across from the campus at the Thesis Hotel in Coral Gables, our store is easily accessible to all fans. Hurry in and shop during our store hours, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Get ready for the spring game. Get ready for baseball season, jerseys, hats, t-shirts, and more at the Hurricanes Team Store.
Now back to Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U, AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
Welcome back to the Hurricane Hotline. Continuing on, talking more University of Miami football. Josh Darrow joins us now. You can hear Josh every week with the University of Miami with the Behind the U podcast. This week's guest, J.D. Pickell. Josh?
Another edition of the Behind the U podcast. We're turning our attention to football, as we mostly do. In the meet, we'll get someone who talks for a living about football, J.D. Pickell of On3 Sports. J.D., thanks for doing this.
Man, it's a blast. It's a blast that we're actually talking about actual cleats being on turf and footballs being thrown and not just speculation around the portal and winter conditioning. Like we got real football, man. So I'm juiced to be on with you talking some ball.
All right, let's start here. You had a chance to have Mario Cristobal, Coach Cristobal, on the Hard Count. What did you want to know going into that, right? You're getting ready. You're going to talk to Coach. You have your 15 to 20 minutes, give or take. What were you curious about relative to the University of Miami football team?
I think there's so much that's gone on under the surface and things that we don't necessarily get to see from like an output standpoint, because I think everybody has an opinion on the record and they watch the highlights on SportsCenter on Saturday and they make their opinion on Mario Cristobal and they make their opinion on Miami. And I mean, we understand this, you know, being so close to it. I think college football fans that really consume this thing on a daily basis understand, like, it doesn't just happen. You hire the right guy, you get results right away. Like there were some things that he had to, you know, go through and change and move around and kind of make it his own. So I was curious, hey, what's going on behind closed doors to get to where you expect to be long term? And are you satisfied with that process? And he was really transparent. And he's like, you know, it's not where we want to be right now, but we're going to work every single day. And he also did say, like, hey, I'm really proud of the growth that we have had here. Like, the statistical improvement they've had year over year, they're like top 25 in total defense. They were, I think, somewhere in the 60s or in the 80s nationally in year one. They've made substantial improvements offensively, even with how much they turned the ball over. So I think the things that you're seeing on paper haven't translated to the wins you want to see just yet if you're a Miami fan. But I do think there is some real growth there to kind of hang your hat on. And it's not all just Kool-Aid is what I'm trying to say. There's some real growth there. And so I was curious to ask about that.
The guys at 247 do some really good work down here. David Lake, Gabby Arrudia. I was listening to their podcast the other day, and I thought one of the guys, I think it was David Lake, made a great point. And these guys basically said, hey, look, Miami's bringing back their two coordinators for the first time in probably about 6 years. And I really thought it was illuminating, because the way I equated it was, go to your job at On3. And if your managing editor changed year in, year out, yeah, you're at On3, and yeah, you do the hard count, but it's not always, that doesn't mean it's the same. I think having them back for year two means you have the opportunity to grow, right? Because certain things are in place, and you played collegiate football, like, I think you would understand the inherent benefit of having that.
There's like a real trust factor there too. Like, I want to trust that person I'm working with day to day. I mean, just from a coordinator perspective, like, okay, I've been with you. We've had results. You don't get the entire inventory of what a play caller has in his bag just from his first year. Like, there's levels to it, as we like to say. There's an evolution there. And so to be able to now go from phase one to phase two, there's going to be more trust with the players. There's going to be more advances, more nuances put into the offense, you'd imagine. Also, you just upgrade at quarterback to call a spade with Cam Ward from an ability standpoint, if nothing else. So, yeah, I think it's extremely fair to say, like, there's another step to be taken now, just by what you said, the continuity. And you can't put a price on continuity. There's no headline that you get with having your coordinator stay for another year, but it doesn't make headlines, and people just kind of define a coach or a coordinator from a 1 year sample size. And that's just very seldom how it really is.
Back to what you alluded to in the first question about what was going on behind the scenes. And again, I think you're sensitive to that because you've been through it, right? You understand it, what happens from December to March before spring ball, and then in the summer conditioning time, and with the time you now get on the field and the time you get in the classroom. What did you hear in terms of what Mario said about those things that you can kind of put a finger on, having lived it?
I think his tenor was interesting when he talked about the way they're approaching spring football and the way they've approached winter conditioning. Because I think a lot of coaches are going to say the right things, like, hey, we're working hard, we're going after it. I think the way that he not just talked about that, but then steered so far the other direction, saying we don't want to be this program where we tweet stuff out. We don't want to slogan it up. Like, we know what we have to do. We know we're not where we want to be. Like, we have to just genuinely stack bricks. And I mean, whether it be a coach, whether it be a boss, I think the folks that focus so heavily on process, and you hear the other coaches across college football talk like this, the ones that just focus on winning the moment, winning the day, winning the workout, and focusing on that side of things, not so much the output. I think you see a lot of benefit from that. It's where you see the best results. And so, you know, you're trying to take a lot from a little there, honestly, obviously, from getting a few minutes with Coach Cristobal. And he's probably trying not to give me too much either. I would imagine if he's a good head coach of college football, he's kind of having the right answer scripted out a little bit there. But I think the way he spoke about it was encouraging to me if I'm a Miami fan.
All right. You mentioned Cam Ward, clearly massive, right? I'm in a very narrow world, right? I'm watching my team orange and green. So how much were you familiar with Cam prior? How much have you sort of narrowed in on him since? And what can his effect be? And what have you seen when you've watched him?
Yeah, a fair amount to talk about, you know, how much I had seen him play. Now, I'm not going to lie to you and say I was watching, you know, copious amounts of Washington State football, but especially once he, you know, jumped in the portal, you know, I knew of him. I kind of had seen his game. The reputation that preceded him was, hey, this guy's an air raid quarterback. This is a guy who has a ton of just arm talent, which in itself, I think, molds pretty well to what Shannon Dawson wants to do offensively. Because my feeling, not to go another direction with your question in terms of how I answer this, I think Cam Ward and his skill set with what he does throwing the football downfield, he averaged 7.7 yards an attempt at Washington State. That air raid skill set, I think, is going to fit a lot more with how Shannon Dawson wants to run his offense. And for whatever reason, it wasn't a fit with Tyler Van Dyke. I don't think that's a tremendous knock on Tyler Van Dyke as much as it just like, hey, sometimes it's not a fit. The fumbles are concerning to me. I think Cam Ward and his athleticism to maybe add them a little bit more than Tyler Van Dyke is going to pay dividends. My big question is, do they have the wide receivers to capitalize on that. I'm not saying they don't. I just think that's something you're watching if you're a Miami fan, if it's Restrepo or Josiah Trader. So that's a long way to say dude can freaking spin it. And he's a good athlete. And it's going to be a lot of fun for Miami fans.
I guess this everyone has their list, but in the pecking order of guys in the portal, you put Cam Ward where, not only like an exact number, but in the upper echelon of talent acquisition this offseason?
For my money, now, I don't do our rankings for on three, so I don't want to go against those folks that put those together. I would have taken Cam Ward if I had a chance to grab anybody out of the portal at the quarterback position, that is. Now, Dylan Gabriel, there's the experience factor, which makes him attractive. A lot of good players, Cam Ward and his ability. There's a reason why a lot of those other schools were pushing hard after him, why Auburn jumped in the mix late, why Florida State was pushing hard for him. I thought USC made a lot of sense early on for him. I thought Ohio State made sense. So I mean, those are schools that attract a lot of the top quarterbacks. So the fact that Miami was able to land him, I think speaks to who he is. And then again, my opinion, I think he's one of the best tier one guys. I mean, if he's not one, he's top two.
So you mentioned air raid's been thrown around a lot, and you even asked Coach Dawson about it. Right? A lot of air raid guys, you ask them about air raid, and they will just say they usually come back with something along the lines of it's not really – it is a scheme, but they'll usually say it's a mentality before they say it's a scheme. But as you sort of use those two words, air raid, in your familiarity with play calling, play scheme, et cetera, how do you define it or how would you explain it?
To put it in phrases, I think they want to apply pressure to the perimeter of the defense. And so when you're attacking the sideline, when you're trying to get the ball out quick to the quarterback, or the quarterback's trying to get the ball out quick to the quick out or any of those perimeter throws, what that does is it causes that middle of the defense to kind of stretch a little bit. And we understand, like, hey, when you stretch something, it's a little bit more thin. You can poke some more holes in it, and then there's a chance for some more passing lanes, some more big plays. And so I think they do still want to be efficient throwing the football, and they want to still run the football, obviously. As long as Mario Cristobal is the head coach, they're going to have an edge to him for sure. But that's the best way I would describe it, putting pressure on the defense to make it stretch and then poking holes in it.
I do think Mario is in the process of putting his stamp on what he believes in by how he's acquired talent for this team relative to the offensive line and defensive line. And I do think it speaks to when you get to the elite level of college, when you start getting to those final four teams or ultimately more. When you look at Alabama or Georgia, right, those teams, at the end of the day, they all have, yes, they have good quarterback play. But to me, the difference has always been what they do up front. Like if you want to put the ultimate separators on, in my opinion, it's the front. On either side of the ball is where is the biggest gap between the elite and a lot of other schools.
I mean, the tale of all this time, right? Big people are going to move small people, and you can run whatever scheme you want. But if we just get to, for the duration of four quarters, make you submit physically, like run whatever you want, you're not going to be able to beat us because we're going to control the football. We're going to control the line of scrimmage. We're going to keep you from getting what you want. You're going to pressure your quarterback. Like, I think you're exactly right. And we had Shane Beamer on the show today, actually. And he was like, the guy, the teams that are the best in the country at stopping the run, pretty much always those are the teams that are competing for championships to some degree. So I think, yeah, that's the schemes change, but that one rule, that does not change.
All right. So as someone who's a national analyst, talking head, et cetera, we get a very micro myopic view of our team, right? And what it should be or shouldn't be or where it's going, et cetera. So from your standpoint, I was just sort of curious what your thought of Miami, like how it's been, kind of where it is, and where do you think it's going?
I think where it was, and I'll just go in the last couple of years stint to kind of give context for Coach Cristobal. I think there were probably some issues that were deeper than just the roster. And again, this is just sort of my assessment of things, not having been in the building or have any concrete information.
Come down whenever you want. Come on.
Yeah. Hey, South Florida, any time of the year is definitely a destination for us. For sure. So my thought process on that is I think the roster level and I think the overall focus, I'd have to just assume, isn't where it was needed to be to win at the level they wanted to win at. Where it is right now, I mean, I think there's a lot made about Mario Cristobal and what hasn't happened on game day just yet. Everyone keeps telling me, like, college football, talent acquisition, recruit this, portal that. And I'm like, well, Mario Cristobal keeps dominating in all those sectors, which was the advertisement when he came to Miami. And so where it's going in the future, if you're telling me it's about having the right talent, you're telling me it's about having someone who has the right structures in place, I'm seeing, this arrow pointing straight up for where Miami is and where they're headed. And so I think the thing that also makes sense for me when talking about Miami is the ACC feels very wide open. Like, it's great to have growth and it's great to have the right guys on your roster. But like, if you got to line it up against you know, the Monstars every other weekend, it's sort of a different conversation. I don't really see that in the ACC. That's not throwing shade at the conference. I just think we don't know what Florida State is. They're like 83rd returning production. Clemson's been on a downward trend the last couple of years. And so I'm looking at Miami, I'm like, I would probably take them right now to have one of, if not the best quarterback in the conference, probably one of the best rosters in the conference. And so I really like Miami a lot heading into this year. I think they're going to be the future is very bright in Coral Gables, in my opinion.
What were your other curiosities, like points of interest relative to not bad or good, just points of interest relative to where I think we'll kind of push this program in 24?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the question overall for me was like, okay, so what's going to change now? Like you know, you do the right things for a while, you lay the foundation, you do the right things in the offseason, you see this positive trend, but like what's that light bulb moment that's going to get you from B to C? And it feels like for most coaches, what they talk about is what helps us win. And then Josh, you know this as well as anybody. It's not about talent to some degree. Like you stack up Alabama and Michigan last year, roster talent is probably comparable. What ended up, you know, allowing Michigan to win the national championship was things like, you know, as cliche as it is, team chemistry and connectivity and not beating yourself. And so I guess my question is, at what point does that happen at Miami and what does that look like? Is that something that happens in September and we're like, okay, you know, it's rolling right now? Is it something that has to happen in a close game in October and they find a way to get it done in the fourth quarter and find a way to win a nail biter? So what he would define as that light bulb moment, I think would be the most intriguing thing to me. I don't know there's a one word answer to that or there's a one sentence answer to that, but I think that's the thing that we'll be really curious. We can all sit down and look and say, okay, this is when Miami flipped a switch. This is when Miami was, I hate to use the word back because I think that's such an overused phrase, but
we are, I start to arrive. Like quiver and I like have like withdrawals like every time. Yeah. I've been hitting over the head too many times with that. It's banned. I think it's actually a banned word. It's been struck from the record on this podcast. No, I'm just kidding. All right, buddy. I don't want to take up any more of your time. JD Bakel on 3 Sports. What, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 11 a.m. if it's live? What's the handle on Twitter real quick?
At JD Bakel. So JD PICKELL.
I brought this stuff up in all sincerity. It's thought-provoking in that. If it moves the cranium a little bit, I'm all about it.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it.
All right, that's Josh Darrow with JD Bakel. Thanks to Josh Darrow for joining us on the show. Also, Alex Mirabal, Don Bailey Jr., Jim Larranaga, and JD Arteaga. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. We'll see you next week, next Wednesday for the Hurricane Hotline right here on WQAM.
Refund is your down payment. You got to go to Luke.
Get great deals on new Chevy trucks like Silverado Customs from $299 a month or Silverado 1500 RST up to $10,000.